Aviation Quest is C101, wind 270 degrees, 10 knots, runway 27 left, cleared for takeoff.
Aviation Quest CC101, cleared for takeoff, 27 left. V1, rotate. Positive climb.
Aviation Quest CC. Stories from above. The views shared in this podcast are personal and for informational purposes only. They do not reflect any employer or aviation authority, and nothing discussed here should be considered flight training or regulatory guidance. Please always refer to official sources. This episode may also contain product placements. For further information, visit our website aviation-quest.ca.
Hello everybody and welcome back to another episode of Aviation Quest CC. I'm Stefan Lorenz, I'm one of your hosts, but of course I'm not alone. Regular listeners will know I'm never on my own. We have our beloved friend and proper professional podcaster here, Jürgen. Jürgen, how are you?
Hi, I'm Jürgen Reis. Yeah, and I mean proper professional. I leave it this way. I am really proud to present you today a proper professional interview because of a really, really professional guest. It's just an honor to have an interview with Captain Guillaume Dubouchet, founder and CEO of Airline Selection Program ASP. Stefan, I think you will agree this is, it's an honor for our young podcast to have, such a guest.
Exactly. I unfortunately couldn't be there. So Jürgen will conduct the interview. So you will hear the interview just with Jürgen. But obviously I listened to the interview afterwards and I have to say it was a really, really cool and interesting listen. If any of you out there are even remotely interested in a career in aviation, this is exactly the kind of podcast you need to listen to. There's so much information in here, so much cool insight, so much wisdom from someone who has been in this industry for a very long time and helped, hundreds of people to prepare for their step into aviation. So I thought it was a really great interview, very insightful and very interesting.
Guillaume brings a rare combination of cockpit experience and airline recruitment insights, and his career has included flying for major international airlines, command experience on the Boeing 777, and direct involvement in pilot selection. And certainly this is podcast gold, as Stefan pointed out, for everybody looking forward to a professional career in aviation.
Yeah, because he knows both sides of the coin. He was the one interviewing people, deciding whether he wants them in the company or not. So he knows exactly what people like him who still do this and who will be sitting opposite of you one day are looking for, what they like, what they don't like. So yeah, it's really good, really cool and interesting podcast, by the way, not just for people that are trying to get into the industry. He's also coaching a lot of experienced pilots that want to change companies or maybe doing the upgrade, things like this. So anyone who's facing any kind of interview, selection, anything like that, either to get into the industry or if you are already in the industry, basically that he's your man. He's the one to coach you and to prepare you as best as he can.
You will agree, Stefan, you were there. The most decisive step for a professional career is often airline selection or also the upgrade or whatever. Those selection days, they are life-changing, hopefully in a positive way. And yeah. ASP, I mentioned in the beginning that Guillaume Dubouchet is the founder and CEO of this company. He is running there. And the program focusing on interview preparation, simulator assessment, CV and cover letter work, English, operational understanding, and the broader mindset needed to perform professionally on selection day.
Yeah, exactly. Very interesting guy, very interesting man. I thought it was a really cool interview. Brought back a lot of memories from my time when I tried to get into aviation. Not all of it positive, because it is a tough time. But he's the right person to listen to if you want to take that step. So shall we get started with the interview, Jürgen? Are you happy to switch over to the interview part?
I'm not sure. I mean, first, I have to congratulate you to one of your achieved goals, 10,000 subscribers on your FS Clips YouTube channel, if you allow, Stefan. Yes. I allow myself this minute. And thanks to, this was not off topic, because YouTube, so to say, pilot, I leave it like this, Stefan is also providing the, so to say, the video background for our YouTube podcast version. We are an audio cast. We are on Spotify, Apple Podcast, Amazon Podcasts, Podcast Addict, and Podigy. But we also got a YouTube channel, and thanks to Stefan's YouTube work, we also have here a flight for you, so that you got something going on the screen. So what is the flight about today?
Well, we are flying with British Airways on an Airbus A320 from Milan to London Heathrow. And I'm glad you remembered that we need to mentioned this at the beginning, because I forgot, and this is why at the beginning I said you are the professional podcaster, and I'm just here for the ride.
Let's leave it like this. I got the checklist in the podcast studio, and you got them in the cockpit.
Exactly. All right. Okay.
But well, yeah, I mean, now I think we should finally look forward to an episode. Stefan, you will agree, it's not about shortcuts, because they are impossible on a selection day. It's about preparation, realism, and understanding what airlines are truly looking for.
Exactly. Very well put. So, okay, without further ado, I will pass you on now to Jürgen's amazing interview, and we'll hear you after on the other side after the interview is done. Enjoy!
Captain Guillaume Dubuchet, it's great to have you with us. You've seen airline selection from both the cockpit and the recruitment side. And today, through airline selection program, you are helping pilots prepare for that critical step. Before we dive in, how do you currently see your role in the aviation world, Guillaume? And what is Airline Selection Program trying to bring to pilot careers today?
Well, we help pilots achieve their full career potential, which starts by getting a fast job fast and subsequently getting the career that they truly deserve. Getting the fast job fast is the most difficult phase for any pilot, particularly in today's market. And even after you've been successful, getting your optimal career is something that's very important for a pilot, because you might start in an airline that gave you your first few hundred hours, but eventually you need to evolve into an airline that is more stable for you, that will allow you to have a more fulfilled life and perhaps also better security in terms of simple job security. So we help pilots across this whole phase of going through airline selections and interviews, whether they are cadets with no hours or at least no commercial pilot's license, or low timers, typically who have just been through flight school and now have to find their first job with a license in hand, or experienced pilots. We go as far as helping experienced captains change airlines, which again is very important for them. Anyone who has a selection in front of them as an important period of their life, just lying just in front of them. And whether you're an ab initio or a captain, this time is important for you. Otherwise, you wouldn't be going through the pain of the selection. The candidate we help the most is typically the low timer, because they are very keen in the sense that now it's important that they materialize this investment. And for them to not be able to materialize this investment is going to be a life-changing situation. And so we really help them unlock the potential that they have so that they are part of those who will succeed and will make it into a cockpit, because not everybody does.
Yeah, but Guillaume, why do you think airline selection is still underestimated by many pilots? Because it seems to be this way.
Yeah, it is this way. It's always been this way. And this is something that we are looking to change in a long-lasting manner. The reason is very simple, is that the regulator, typically EASA, but also the FAA and any governing body, has not made it part of any curriculum to prepare candidates to become professionals. And so they go through flight school, having to do a certain number of theory modules and then a certain number of flights, and then they go through exams and they get their licenses. At no point here is anything taught on how to become a professional, an employee ready to go through a process as difficult and varied as an airline selection. And therefore, candidates go through their training, and for them it's like climbing a huge mountain. They've come to the top, what they think is the top of the mountain, with their license in hand, and they don't know, they don't anticipate that there's an even bigger mountain to climb, which is to convince an airline that you are the candidate that they've been looking for. For this, there are certain competencies that you need to develop. Communication is one, but also a good understanding of the airline pilot role. What exactly is it to be an airline pilot? What are the challenges that an airline pilot may face in their career? How do you project yourself according to this? And there are also some codified rules that you might want to be aware of when you go for any interview in any industry, mistakes not to make, golden rules you need to be aware of, so that the interview goes swimmingly for you and that the recruiter doesn't feel that it's difficult for them to recruit you. So this element of professionalization will make a massive difference in your life, whether you're a pilot or actually an employee or an aspiring employee of any industry. If you are successful at any single selection that you envisage, you will become the CEO of a big company. But if you fail half the time, you will have a career that will look quite different. Therefore, and if you fail most of the time, you will not fulfill your dreams. And so learning this skill is something that should be taught at high school, if you ask me. Knowing it specifically is something that should be taught at flight school, and it is not. Many things should be taught at high school that are not, such as managing your money, such as knowing how to apply for jobs and knowing to interview. And at flight school, it's the same when it comes to interviews. It's no one's fault, and it's not the flight school's fault either. But the fact is, the pilot has this responsibility to make the final step towards the airline, because the airline won't make the final step towards them. The airline has to feel that this candidate has sufficient motivation, represents a low level of risk into bringing them into their workforce. And so it is up to the pilot to take their destiny into their hands and to do the last mile of training, which is preparing for airline selections.
You just brought up some great metaphors, so the steep mountain and also the last mile. I mean, allow me a practical question, Guillaume. What do candidates, in your eyes, most often misunderstand about what airlines are actually assessing for?
A lot of candidates think that airlines are assessing the technical side of the candidate, which in fact is dealt with for the most at the psychometric stage, which often includes embedded in it an ATPL multiple choice question, which will validate that actually this candidate is, between brackets, smart enough. They underestimate that what makes a candidate truly valuable to an airline is a combination of being smart. Of course, we want smart pilots, but being emotionally smart as well. No one teaches them what emotional intelligence is about. And when you don't know something that you should be knowing, it's very difficult to perform at anything. And this is why there is so much of a misunderstanding between what the candidate thinks they are going to be asked and what the airline actually expects.
But to break it down, what are the key pillars? So in your point of view of a modern airline selection in 2026 and beyond the flying skills, what really differentiates candidates, Guillaume? I mean, yeah, deep dive question, but certainly deep dive answer from you. Take your time.
Yeah, so what will differentiate a candidate is one who is able to display this emotional intelligence and superimpose it with a strong knowledge of the target airline and as well a strong knowledge of the airline pilot role and its constraints. So when you have all of this together, and if you add as well a good interview technique, now you're starting to have a very polished candidate. So when we talk about emotional intelligence, it's your ability to work together in a team in a way that brings the best of every single team member. It's what we call, it's an extension, it's emotional intelligence is a wide concept, just like CRM is, and in a way, it's the same thing, okay? It's you being able to relate with others, being able to anticipate how they might behave, to anticipate when they might not be performing at their best, using communication as a tool in order to make sure that everybody is on the same page. And then, of course, you have your ability to be a team player, to work as a team, and also to be able to lead, and alternating between leading and following in a way that is healthy in the flight deck. But for this, you need to understand the dynamics between the big CRM blocks and also the competencies that are expected of an airline pilot in 2026, which have been the same for the last few years as dictated by ICAO, but also the competencies that are required from a recruitment point of view. Most of you will know the 9 ICAO competencies that are being evaluated when you go to the sim or during your line checks. There are a few more competencies that are evaluated during the HR interview, such as motivation. This is not a competency that is listed as an ICAO competency, but motivation is very important when you enter an airline. Also, your creativity is something that is evaluated that might seem very counterintuitive to a candidate, because candidates, especially when they are fresh out of flight school, they've been taught to follow procedures at all times. And so they think that being creative is not part of the equation as a pilot, but actually it is. You, as a pilot, and you know, because you're a pilot, you follow the rules, but sometimes the rules don't exactly work according to plan. That can be the case if something happens to the airplane technically, but it can be also the case if something happens to the operational procedurally. You might want to adapt a few things and respect the spirit of the rule, not necessarily the rule point blank. Also, there might be multiple rules that could be in conflict, so you will need to make that call together with your colleagues. So that is something that they need to understand. And also, intellectual honesty is something that is being evaluated in a candidate. So a candidate that's not easy to interview, that when you ask them questions, they seem to not give you frank answers, that you have to rephrase constantly, that it feels that they're hiding something, they're going to score low on this one. But at the same time, if they are too honest, then you can have the opposite effect, that they volunteer shortcomings into the interview, which creates risk for the recruiter and will not make them very comfortable in hiring you. So you see, there's a whole lot of things that you have to master in order to be successful at your interviews. And I would say that to many of you listening at this point, you might think, oh my God, what he just said, there's so many things to know. And I'll go, yes, there's a lot to know. But the fact is that this training to professionalize yourself, which is what it is really, it's the last thing that you need to succeed. And we try and teach it in a way that's as compact as possible, but it's It's not because it's the last thing that it's necessarily that it should be short. Yes, if you want to do it well, there's actually a lot of things that you have to know that you didn't know that you should know. But I'll finish this one on this. Is people tend to succeed at anything once they know what they should be knowing and they have the skills that they should be having. Okay, if you don't know what you should be doing or you don't have the skills that you should be having, you would tend to fail. But come a point, if you have what is required, there comes a point it becomes difficult to fail, particularly if you practice a lot. And that's actually what you've done your whole life through high school, through flight schools. Flight school, you gain some theory, you put the theory into practice, you did it many times enough so that you started to master what you were doing. It's no different for selection.
Yeah. But yeah, let's have a little bit of a deep dive into this human factor modality that's going on here. When you meet a candidate today, you know, with all your experience, I don't know how many applicants you had face to face. You know, yeah, it must be thousands. I don't know. At least hundreds. I have no clue. But what tells you, maybe within minutes, Guillaume, whether they are ready or not?
Well, actually, you find out, you get a lot of cues already when you read their cover letter. So the first contact you will have with a candidate at the final interview stage is through their paperwork, through their CV and cover letter.
Uh-huh.
This actually precedes the candidate into the room. You know how very often people say you never make a second get a second chance to make a first impression. A lot of people view this as, I enter the room, I need to smile in order to look like I'm someone friendly, stand straight so I look confident. This is true. Okay, your body language is very important. But the first impression you actually don't make with your body, you make with your writing. Mm-hmm. 10, 15 minutes before you enter the room, the recruiter will read your material and make themselves a first opinion on you. And I can tell you, the way you write is a very good reflection on how you're likely to speak. So when I see a cover letter that is very long, typically 500 words or more, I go like, oh my God, I'm going to have to read all this. And because if you are in a real recruitment scenario, you are going to read the whole thing. It's your duty, you know, to read this. And instantly what you think is, this person is probably going to be difficult to interview because they are going to be verbose. They're not going to get to the point. Mm-hmm. Very often, long letters are filled with generalities, superlatives, and they actually rarely contain precise information. Mm-hmm. A short letter will get straight to the point and often contains very relevant information about the candidate, but also about why they want to join our airline. So you see, you get the opportunity right there to know quite a lot about the candidate. Also, if their CV is clean and easy to understand, if it's not a multi-colored CV with lots of little icons everywhere that will kind of get my eyes, you know, a few 30 seconds to get used to the format, then I will have the feeling that this candidate understands what I'm trying to achieve here. Of course, it's impossible for the candidate to guess that without someone, well, like myself, I guess, to tell them what is expected. But you will find invariably that recruiters want CVs that are clean, black and white, in line, old-fashioned, okay, just because you see so many of them. It would be different if you would be working in a marketing agency or in sales or in another industry, but for pilots, that's just what is expected. So your question was about what can immediately tell you, so this is one. And just so you know, a cover letter with the heading included and your signature and everything should never, in my mind, be more than 350 words. More than likely, if you're listening to this and you're looking at your letter, right now it's around 400 words, 420, and you're probably wondering, how can I shape things? Well, there's a technique to go about that that we teach in one of our courses. When you get very good at it, you can actually write a letter that's around 290, 300 words, that's super impactful. Mark Twain said, I didn't have time to write a short letter, so I wrote a long one.
And there's a lot of truth in this, yeah.
There's a lot of truth. You know this when you write emails, right? You make a first draft, it's usually long. And you manage to shorten it by half and just get to the essence of it. This work, although the recruiter might not have my level of analysis of it, they get the CVs and they get a feeling, right? And the letters. But they feel that this is just nice when someone gets to the point quickly. I'm not saying that there should be nothing in your letter, but it should be really impactful.
No, I have written and published 7 books, Guillaume. I'm absolutely in your corner. Writing is, some people think it's easy, but especially what you said about long and the short writing, I subscribe every word you just.
Well, yes, and it's not really a candidate's job to write. It's not there. It's not what we expect from them.
But I mean,
really,
the paperwork should be right. I mean,
It should be. And just this morning, actually, we read a letter for a candidate just this morning, and he, you know, he's a military pilot, very skilled in what he does, and he's reconverting to civilian life. And he needed my help very clearly. And now he went like, oh my God, this looks quite different to what I wrote. I said, yes, it does. But it's everyone has their speciality. Okay, so.
But let's say the paperwork is okay.
Let's say the paperwork is okay.
We are in the interview now, Guillaume. What makes an answer in an interview credible instead of just correct?
The quality of the evidence. So the recruiter is looking for evidence of things that will have happened in your past, because the best way to know how you're going to behave tomorrow with us, typically, is to know how you behaved in a similar situation to what you might encounter tomorrow in a recent past. So we are going to ask questions to the candidate about things that happened in a recent past. Tell me a time when you had a difficult situation at work. Okay, there are four big areas of questions that we ask. I don't have the time, there's not the scope here to be able to go into detail, but this is typically a question you could get with multiple variations. But tell me a time where you faced a difficult situation at work. And so here there is a technique to answer, which is that you need to bring this person with you into this day. Remember, the recruiter didn't know you 10 minutes ago. They've never seen you. They've met you through your paperwork, they've seen you enter the room, and they've started to gather a feeling about you during your personal presentation, seeing if you are someone who communicates well, who gets to the point, if this matches what they saw on their letter. And now they're getting into the bulk of the interview, which is asking such questions. And so they still don't know you that much. So you're going to want to bring an outline of what happened. So when was it? It's always the first thing to say, because the recruiter wants to know. Imagine if you have someone who had a 15-year career already, or maybe a 15-year career, and you start to give them the example right away. The first thing I'm going to wonder is, when did this happen? Was this last year, 6 months ago, 10 years ago? Because it's more relevant if it's recent. Okay, so when did this happen? Where was it? Which airport? Where did you take off from? Where were you going? Which phase of flight, maybe?
Yeah.
What actually happened? And then how did it unfold? Okay, so you go across this and this format that, and you need to bring in the elements that the recruiter needs in order to understand you. If, for instance, you would work, let's take the example of the military, for instance, there are some things that are not done the same in the military as in civilian life. You need to explain to the recruiter how different this is. Or yesterday, I was working with a candidate who flew passengers. He was a commercial pilot, but doing single pilot operations. Mm-hmm. The performance rules are not the same. Okay, the regulations are not exactly the same. So you have to explain to your recruiter when there's something about a runway length or about a performance issue or whatever it is, what you are allowed to do and not allowed to do, because it is different to what the recruiter knows. Okay, so put yourself in the shoes of someone who doesn't know what you're doing and bring them into this world of yours and this episode of yours. And by being quite precise, the recruiter will have a good feeling of what you did. And very often, they are going to ask you to detail a certain element of this episode. And because, of course, you are going to bring more context, they're going to feel comfortable that this actually really happened. It's very difficult for anyone to fake a story of that nature anyway. So by asking questions in the past, we are quite reassured that this is true. And then very often we are going to ask questions related to what the candidate was trying to explain, but often we are going to actually veer sideways and ask a question related to something the candidate didn't expect. For instance, they want to tell us about a go-around situation that they had. So question could be, tell us about a quick decision you had to make. So they tell us, oh, on this day, on the runway was suddenly blocked and we went around. And they're going to want to tell me about how they did the procedure and how they came back, etc., how they communicated with the passengers, perhaps. And that's what they plan to say. But I'm going to go like, okay, just before, let's just hold it for a little while. I'm going to ask them, how did they plan for the end of their flight? Okay, what was the plan B? Did they assess the fuel situation in advance? Did they know how much time they would have in case of a go-around? Did they know how much leeway they had before they were going to have to divert? Was this done? And then they're going to say yes, more than likely, or they're going to say that they had lots of fuel, maybe they had lots of fuel, so okay, this was not really an issue. And then after the go-around, I'm going to ask them to run the exact sequence that they went through, because when you finish a go-around, usually you will do the after takeoff checklist, unless you're on an Airbus and there's no checklist, but you typically do, well, the actions are completed, and normally the first thing you do is, what's my fuel? Because usually the go-around happens, you will agree with me, I'm sure, Jürgen, at the end of the flight. And at the end of the flight...
Usually.
And at the end of the flight, usually you have a lot less fuel than at the beginning of the flight. And in today's world, we take as little fuel as possible. And so typically a go-around results in a fuel situation more than anything else.
Yeah.
And so it's important that the person didn't dive into a second approach without this having been evaluated. Okay? So you see how this question that was initially about a go-around ends up being about how they then did the right thing, applied their procedures properly, and acted deliberately.
So also the storytelling, you make, so to say, a deep dive in their own storytelling and ask for real-world facts. And also, I think, if I got this right, this prevents a little bit from the stories that might have been learned by heart.
Oh, yeah. No, learning a story by heart is not a good idea. And we don't teach. We give pointers to our clients as to if you get asked a question in this area, it's always good to highlight this sort of part of you. Having rehearsed things is not a way to go, because it means that you prepared if you rehearse, but it means you haven't prepared enough, in fact. Because when you know something, you don't need to learn it by heart. You can talk about it for hours, like I'm doing now. You know, we didn't really prepare for this that much. We're just talking about things that we know. Something that we often see when we're working on camera with the clients is a client who's not ready, typically a few weeks or maybe a month or so into having learned the course. When we ask them a question, they are struggling to maintain eye contact. And the reason is that they're still looking into their left brain for the information that they have stored somewhere here, somewhere there. Mm-hmm. It's not part of their DNA yet. And it takes a bit more expertise, more practice before it's part of them. Mm-hmm. More dreaming about it, you know, more nights mulling over it. And come a point, it becomes natural, and then that's when the candidate is ready.
Yeah, Guillaume, but let's take a step back and switch right into your core part here, the preparation and the quality of preparation.
Yeah.
What does quality preparation actually look like in 2026? So let's say somebody listening to this interview just finished flight school. Where to start? What or a broader question certainly, what does actually quality preparation look like in your opinion now in 2026?
Well, I'll tell you how I've approached my experience to learning in my own life. I've always wanted to be trained by the best. When someone inspires me, I want this person to train me. And I've applied this my whole life. And recently, after I created the airline selection program, for instance, I wanted to learn video marketing and various other things because I thought it was a very good way to convey my thoughts, but I didn't know how to do it. I didn't know how to operate a camera. So I found someone who inspired me, an American marketer typically, and I got her course. And then I got a bit of mentoring with her. And then, well, guess what? I had some really good information at hand and I was operational with it. Training from people who inspire you and who you can see have the skills that you're trying to get yourself is the way to go. So you can look all over the internet and find who inspires you the most, I guess. But come a point, the internet is insufficient because there's too much. It's a bit counterintuitive, but because there's so much information, actually, you'll never make a method out of it. It's the greatest source of knowledge. It's also the greatest source of confusion. It's something I often say in my masterclasses. Knowledge alone is definitely not enough. Most people will tend to remember only 3% of anything they read. Mm-hmm. Unless there is a method with practical cases that gets them to practice this knowledge. And when you go on the internet, you never get the opportunity to practice your knowledge. So for you who is looking to prepare and really want the skill that we were talking about and start to enjoy it as well, because the idea is not that it's difficult. The idea is that it becomes pleasant even to go at a selection. Focused, but pleasant. Well, for this, you need to learn what you don't know yet. And I think you've probably understood that there's quite a lot to learn. And then you need to apply it. And this is what the way we do it with our clients is there is a big e-learning course that takes, it's 12 hours, but it will take more for most people because the idea is to go about it bite-sized. And then every week we meet with our clients every Monday at the moment. It could change, but it's every Monday at 7 p.m. Paris time. And we run for an hour and a half practice sessions in small groups where the candidates get to know each other and also to get asked questions by myself or one of our other instructors. And when they come time and time again, and we see a shift in them at around 5 or 6 sessions where they start to get it. And then when you start to get something, that you start to hone a skill, it's a really pleasant time. And then after that, the candidate just becomes better and better. So if you want to put this into practice, you need to have a method that has these both sides. Because otherwise it just won't work. And if you're considering something that is in classroom, I think it's still possible in some parts of those, in some countries. The problem with that is that it's way too short. If you do a training that's an afternoon, a day or 2 days, mm-hmm. assuming that the person actually has recruited, that the person has the credentials and has worked for a large airline, which this combination of skills, well, it's quite rare actually. But assuming that this person would be great, the problem is after a day or two and they are gone, now you're left with your notes. And how are you going to practice? So in fact, it's not that great. You would need to be exposed to this person much more in order to really develop a skill. More than likely, and such trainings will actually lack in depth to start with. And this is why they managed to do it over a fairly short period of time, because there's not that much into it. So what we do in the preparation of candidates for airline mm-hmm. selections, I think the e-learning is a perfect format. It really fits a modern candidate's needs really well. And to us, we believe that any airline selection training should be universal, meaning it should work for any airline. Of course, you need to fine-tune to your target airline, but the idea is that it should serve you your whole career. And then the second thing is it should be accessible. You should be able to access it on your computer, but also from the palm of your hand if you're in the underground and you have no reception. And to that effect. In our case, we have an app so that anytime you want to learn, you can learn.
Yeah, so, but there is no quick fix. This is my takeaway here. So how much time should candidates allocate nowadays also with your program, or how should they structure the preparation over time, Guillaume?
I will say around 3 months is good.
Okay.
We've had candidates come, and this happens a lot, and this is my message to all of your listeners here, is don't leave it to the last minute. And I'm going to make quite a big development on this, actually, because we've got candidates who come to us within 10 to 15 days. And we, before we take them, we ask them, how much time do you have during the day right now? Because there's quite a lot to learn. And we will build an accelerated phase for them. I'll be personally very aware of these candidates to be able to respond to their questions. But still, it's very short. Okay, it's going to be a huge injection, and you might end up with this in this situation where they might not look you straight in the eye when answering a question because it hasn't had time to sink. So for it to become natural, you need a bit more time. We still had very big success rates with people who come at short notice. It's better to do the course than to not do the course. But your question was how much time, and the idea is 3 months, so that you can enjoy your training, not feel rushed, go over a certain module several times. Also, enjoy your community. We are very tight with our community, with our clients. So we have a Slack community that works very well, and that you have the time to come to as many what we call advanced interview practice sessions as you can on a Monday. And I said I was going to make quite a big development, because the way the market is today, at the moment when we are recording this podcast, the market for low timers is very difficult. And it reminds me of my own story. When I finished my ATPL in 2001 and I finished flight school in 2002. It was a time that was very similar in structure to what we have now. Okay, mm-hmm. It wasn't the same. There wasn't a geopolitical situation like this. It was post-September 2001. And what happened is that hiring stopped for a few months. Some airlines went bankrupt.
Yeah.
Those pilots who were type rated came back onto the market, preventing from any low timer to be able to access the market. And it was very difficult. Even as an instructor in my days, I became an instructor, it was difficult to do anything but to instruct for free at flight school. And even then, it was tough. During a phase like this, you have several solutions. Either you just throw the towel and you go, okay, I'm discouraged, it's not going to work, etc. Or you stay in front of the door. And that's what I did. I decided to work as hard as I could to learn what I needed to learn in order to succeed. As you may know from my story, there was this initial failure at an Air France selection. It happened quite quickly after flight school because somehow my time was up for the selection, and so I got invited. It was the only selection I was going to have for nearly 2 years, okay? Mm-hmm. And this failure was painful, very painful, but also useful in the sense that I went like, okay, I understand that there's something I don't understand, because they debriefed me and told me, and I realized that I made an interview mistake, not a competency mistake. And so I went to learn everything that I could learn about recruitment. I studied American books on recruitment, on HR, not aviation related, just to understand what's the job of a recruiter exactly. Mm-hmm. So I did push-ups during this time when nothing could happen. And I told to myself, I'm going to stay in front of that door. When that door opens, I'll grab an opportunity within a day when it opens, and I put my application first before everybody else, and I'll get invited and I will succeed. And it's exactly what happened. So a couple of years after the Air France thing, I was the first French guy to enter into British Airways. So this sort of mindset is something that I want to convey to those who are right now low timers, probably struggling. And I feel for you if you're listening to this right now. And I know how it feels that maybe this situation will never resolve. And I'll tell you, the truth is, for most of you, well, for many of you, it won't. And the reason is very simple, is at the moment, there are 60,000 pilots in Europe. The average career length is 30 years. It means that you need 2,000 pilots to renew the present pilot pool in Europe. Because of the growth and the fact that the retirement curve, a lot more pilots will retire than in a normal phase, we need 3,000 pilots per year. ATOs in Europe produce 6,000 pilots a year. So mechanically, many pilots won't make it. The days of the COVID recovery, where 6,000 pilots per year were hired and ATOs produced 6,000, are gone. So this is not a message of doom here. My message is there are actually 50% who will make it. And the idea is to put yourself in this position where you will be able to make it. And what I think is after a period of compression that we have right now, where airlines don't know what's going to happen with the future, they are trying to mitigate this. Recruitment is going to grind down. When it will reopen, there will be a period of a bit of a boom again. It will feel a bit like the COVID, but for probably just 3 or 6 months. The window is going to be quite short. During this window, you might not have more than 2 opportunities. You cannot afford to waste one. So if you're serious about this, getting this career, if you want to make good on this investment that you've made, that's probably the biggest investment in your life, you need to prepare now when many people actually are not and are getting discouraged. Get together with a group of pilots who are motivated, be in the solution, not in the problem. And that's what's going to get you that job.
Guillaume, this was such a great interview. You were answering in one single answer almost all of my questions. I can hear on my questionnaire. It was such a great speech by the end. I thank you for every minute. And I mean, coming towards the end of this interview, we are already 9 minutes over the time you promised us. It's such an honor to speak with you. Is there anything else, Guillaume, you want to share with our audience today?
No, I'd like to thank you. Yeah, I feel quite I feel quite motivated myself at the moment. You know, I know that I felt really pumped up today. Very happy to be here. So I'm sorry you went 9 minutes over.
It's for me. I already feel you mean it's your schedule. As I said, it's a pleasure to talk to you. But I don't want to overstress your time schedule here.
Well, that's fine. No, thank you, Jürgen. Thank you for the opportunity. And if you're listening to this podcast, well, I'd like personally to thank Jürgen for the ability to speak to you. Just be in touch. Jürgen will no doubt put in the description everything that you need. And don't despair. There is a light at the end of the tunnel. But right now, you need to stay in that tunnel and do everything you can. Okay? And we'll be reaping the results of your success together.
Thank you, Guillaume. Thank you for every second. And talk to you soon. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye, Jürgen.
All right. And that brings us to the end of the interview. So how was that for you, Jürgen? I really enjoyed listening to that. How was it to be on a one-to-one basis with that interview? Did you find it interesting as well?
It was just an honor to speak to him, and this made absolutely my day. I mean, this April the 7th, 2026 was, by the way, the recording day. I mean, from my side, a sincere thank you to Captain Guillaume Dubouchet for joining us and sharing such clear and practical insights into airline selection. It was just an absolute highlight for our podcast platform.
Yeah, I agree. Super interesting interview. I really enjoyed the part about the CV. I think that's something that a lot of people really don't pay that much attention to, but he's absolutely right. That is the first thing the airline will see That's the first point of contact, your cover letter, your details, all that stuff. And it really matters because these people get handed hundreds, maybe thousands of those things, and they skip through them. And unless you do something that stands out and looks professional, you're just going to fall at the first hurdle. So I think that was a really interesting point that he brought that up. And I think it's very important that people realize what a big role this plays. So yeah, a really cool interview. Very, like you said, very interesting man with a very interesting career. And I think what he does is great because he really helps young people to get into the industry. He helps them to increase their chances to get that first job, which is always the hardest. And yeah, great work, great interview. I really enjoyed listening to it, Jürgen.
I mean, for pilots preparing for airline recruitment, ASP offers structured support, as I already mentioned it in the intro, around the full selection process. Also, the CV and cover letter work, Stefan just pointed out, is there. Then the simulator assessment and certainly the mindset. And more about Guillaume and the Airline Selection Program you can find on his homepage, airlineselectionprogram.com. And certainly we put this homepage also in our... We got the show notes at the end of the teaser. So if you click to the teaser of the podcast, scroll to the end, and there are our show notes, and they this time also include the ASP homepage. Yeah, and I mean, from my side... maybe some add-on here. If you feel that you are technically prepared, so the technical preparation is in place, but the mental side, especially in managing nerves on D-Day, could be improved, I'm happy to support you there. And yeah, as I pointed it out, also in, especially in podcast 28, I'm focusing more and more to one-to-one coaching, also in this area. And you can find my profile on LinkedIn, and the LinkedIn profile is also, so the direct link is also part of the show notes, so my LinkedIn profile. But I think it's not, it's quite obvious. It's my real name, Jürgen Reis. It's not really hard to find. Also, the podcast homepage is a way to get connected with me or to reach out for me. And the initial conversation is always free of charge and without obligation. So... If this is a thing for you, just write in, and I am looking forward to be there for you.
Sounds great. Yeah, I think that's also one part that one should never underestimate. The nerves really kick in, especially if it's, you know, one of those jobs that you really, really want, one of your dream jobs with your dream airline. You finally get invited to the selection process. You know, you probably only going to have one shot, you know. A lot of airlines, they will invite you once, but then usually, unless they're really desperate, that's it, you know. So your mental state on that day plays a huge role. And like Jürgen said, if you can get yourself in a good frame of mind, if you have tools that can help you and techniques that can help you to be calm and collected and confident, that will go a long way. And I guess if anyone who's listening to the podcast on a regular basis knows, like we all know, Jürgen has had a huge amount of experience in that part, you know, of the psychology. So I would definitely say make this part of your preparation to give you the best possible chance.
I mean, I am also writing, I pointed it also out in podcast 28, this mental coaching syllabus for aviation professionals. And I did some really serious research the last months. And there are so many similarities between especially an assessment day or assessment days and sports competition, like I competed in climbing. You know, there's also this one World Cup, And it doesn't help if you are a champion in training, you know, if everything is easy going for you the weeks before, and then you fail on this given day. So this is, yeah. And if you feel, often you feel it inside that you might be also, because of past experiences, maybe you are a person who always had a problem with the nerves when it came to test situation, oral or written exams. I mean, as a pilot, you already got some previous experience in this field, and you think, yeah, this time it should work out. Yeah, as I said, I'm happy to help. Just reach out for me. And yeah, one more time, I'm not a salesperson. The first consulting is always so where we figure out if I can help you or how I can help you. All I can say, please, it's better to contact me weeks before than days before, because like in a competition, also mental training, we are speaking of training, it takes some time of practicing to get it all together. But yeah, I mean, I think this is all I can say from my side. And then, one more time, thank you, Captain Guillaume Dubouchet. And if you listeners are serious about moving from license holder to airline candidate, I guess Stephanie will agree, this episode was definitely one to listen to carefully and maybe more than once.
Yeah, absolutely. Lots of really interesting stuff in there, lots of good tips. He also mentioned the time frame in the interview. Don't leave it too late with your preparation. Give yourself time. There's a lot to take on board. He mentioned 3 months. I think that's very realistic. I myself prepared for my, the big interview with this big international airline. I fly for now. I prepared myself for over 2 months. And I think that's very realistic. That's a good time frame. Yeah. So, yeah, from my side, again, thank you, Jürgen, for the interview. Thank you for being here today with me. Always a pleasure to have you here and talking to you. And to the listeners, big, big thank you for being with us again, for listening to the podcast. And we all look forward to hearing and seeing you again next week.
Yeah, bye-bye also from my side. And by the way, thank you for the nice comments we regularly I regularly receive on my LinkedIn profile or also on the YouTube, so to say, comment section. And by the way, there's also a Discord server. So thank you for all the comments. We are looking forward to hearing from you again. And thank you.
Thank you for listening to Aviation Quest CC, Stories from Above. For more information about this episode and everything we do, visit our homepage aviation-quest.cc. We appreciate your time and support, and we'd love to have you back for the next episode. Until then, stay safe, stay curious, and keep your passion for aviation flying high.